following conscious. You may know a lot, but don't ever think that you got this. Wise words. Pay attention to these wise words. And people follow people, but seldom following dreams. They tend to follow dreams, but never know what they mean. These are wise words. Pay attention to these wise words.
Alright, so we're back on another episode of the Wise Words Relaunch. This is probably going to be round two here. We got Aaron Stark here and co-host Whitey Pines, Mark Wood. Let's start out a little bit. Aaron, tell us a little bit about your background, man. A little brief history of what it was like growing up as little Aaron.
Yeah, it was all over the place, kind of. Had a lot of structure with my grandparents. Was raised by my grandparents in Logan County.
Okay.
I was born in Russellville. Lived in Bucksville the majority of my life.
Wow.
If you know where that's at.
I would not take you for a Bucksville guy.
Yeah, well, my grandfather's house is still in the same place.
That's awesome.
But my grandfather was a truck driver. Grandmother was a stay-at-home grandmother. And we lived all over Logan County for years. So kind of back and forth between households. Mom and Dad really didn't have their shit together, so... So, you know, I spent a lot of time when things were bad with them, ended up with the grandparents. And last place I lived at in Logan County was Bucksville Road. We left there my freshman year of high school and wound up in Bowling Green for high school.
Well, that's crazy. You know, for everybody watching, like, we all grew up around the same area,
mm-hmm.
but this is honestly the first time that I believe I've sat down in person with you. So, like,
yeah.
Y'all are going to get to know us as we get to know each other,
absolutely.
I guess. So, it's going to be pretty cool as far as that goes. But I knew, you know, I found through social media that, you know, you was from Auburn area,
yeah.
or whatnot. And I don't know how we never bumped into each other before.
Yeah, so. I think I'm a little older than you.
Oh, yeah? I'm
41.
Okay, just a little bit.
Yeah, how old are you?
I'm 39.
Okay, yeah, we're not too far then.
Yeah. So you went to high school in Bowling Green, though?
I did. Well, for about 6 months, went to Greenwood High, dropped out my second freshman year of high school.
Your second freshman
year? Yeah, okay. So I have an eighth grade education, never really fully made it through freshman.
Gotcha.
So
this is going to be really good because, you know, the whole thing about this is we like to take someone's, you know, that had a lot of obstacles and struggles that was able to overcome those and become successful, which you have. And we'll kind of jump back and forth a little bit. But
yeah.
Tell us what you do right now. Like,
so I do a couple of things, but my main gig is I own a car lot right around the corner here on the bypass called Stark Motor Company.
Gotcha.
I acquired it about 2 months ago. Had been running that store for an individual here in town for the last 3 years. Was debating on getting out of that business and getting into something a little more time pleasing.
Time friendly for us.
Yep. Yeah. Spent a lot of time at that location, and I told myself I wanted to do something that didn't require me to be in one location at all times.
Mm.
I got a few children and a wife, and felt like time was more important to me at this point in life than anything else. And all of a sudden, God willing, the position arose where I could take over the car lot fully. And
yeah.
I kind of looked at that opportunity as something I knew what I was doing. I knew what I had been doing. I knew what I was good at. And to kind of walk away from that and to get into something else was, you know, probably not a good idea. So I just went full edge and jumped all the way into this thing.
Man, that's almost how you always got to do it, man. You got to, you know, you got to jump from one tree to get to the bigger tree. You got to,
yep.
You know, you got to jump from the nest to fly or whatnot. So
you got a lot of experience with automobiles.
You know, my childhood running around, my dad was always a big gearhead. You know, always had cool cars, just about anything you think of. Dad had, and grandfather was a truck driver. I raced motocross as a kid, stunt rode motorcycles as a adult kid, if you will.
Any wrecks or break anything?
Yeah, fractured my neck racing supercross in Shelbyville, Tennessee when I was 16 years old.
Mm.
And then, of course, stunt riding. You know, where I had been on motocross bikes my whole life, I kind of was conservative. I kind of paced myself and knew what my limits were and kind of kept myself from having any kind of major crashes.
What do you do now to get that adrenaline rush?
You know, every now and then I wind up with a fast car or something, kind of.
Hey, you got some cool. You got a project car, right? Like,
yeah, I got a 72 Skylark. That's,
I mean,
that's pretty much done.
You got.
You know, believe it or not, I don't have that many. Yeah. But now I say that I have not been pulled over. Yeah. On wood. I have not been pulled over in quite some time. Now, there was a time period. On motorcycles, I stayed in trouble.
Yeah.
Stayed arrested, you know, just running from the cops and riding wheelies when I wasn't supposed to be and crap like that. But nothing really ever stuck. No felonies, thank God. But I was able to get out of that with no issue. But,
have you ever had a chase where they didn't catch you?
You know...
Got any open cases?
Yes and no. No, I don't, thank God. You know, I had one out on Louisville Road. My buddy was riding a wheelie. I was not. We saw the cops. They turned. They busted a U-turn. We set them down and took off. Turned on Porter Pike. I felt like I was legal enough, so I pulled over and gave him the distance. And cop blew my doors off. Never even looked at me.
Huh.
And I go up by like Rivendell and I stop. Needless. Later on in the evening, we find out my buddy is over here in the ditch behind me, like hiding it. Laid his bike down so the cops couldn't see him, and the cops were flying out Porter Pike chasing him, but they'd already pulled off. And he saw me, and I thought everything was good. I was like, well, that cop's not chasing me, so I'm going to go on home.
Right.
I get on Corvette Drive, and they corner me and jump me off a bike and impound my bike, tell me to tell who my friend was and all this other stuff.
Wow.
I didn't do all that.
Is that a new law? Or I mean, I don't know. I'm not a bike rider, so yeah. but they can't give chase anymore, right?
You know, it's different in certain areas.
Certain states.
I mean, you go to some cities, and they will flat plow you. But, you know, around here, I don't really know. I know there was a pretty bad accident a few years back out on 6880 that was they were pursuing a kid on a motorcycle, and he ended up dying.
If there is a law that they're not supposed to pursue, I'm sure they obey all the rules and everything that they're supposed to, right?
Yeah, well, you would imagine.
Right.
Yeah, you would assume so.
So how'd you get started selling in the car business?
You know, I had the Polaris dealership out off Nashville Road, Big Country Power Sports.
Oh, okay.
I managed it from 2007 to 2014, had a smidge of ownership in it over the years that I had earned. You know, I come into it. It's kind of crazy story. There's a fella in town that kind of took me in, the family took me in, and just saw the good in me and believed I deserved to be with good people, and they took a chance on me and put me in a position to be there. I started from the very bottom. My first job, day one, was putting Rangers together and washing four-wheelers. That was it. I was making $9 an hour, and I just kind of rode on the heels of the guy that was running the place that was kind of making a lot of mistakes, running people off, didn't have a good personality, didn't have a good attitude toward the customers. And I just wanted that position. So when the owner fired him, I literally went in the next day, sat at the desk. The owner walked in. He's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm doing this. Like, let me do it. Dude, I sat down and I did not even know how to use an adding machine. I had no idea what an interest rate was. Couldn't work terms on a loan. I had no clue.
Mm-hmm. My high school dropped. How long had you been there?
I had been there at that point for just a tad over a year, but I wanted it, you know, and a lot of things had changed over that year. I come in, you know, I'm fresh out of stunt riding, street bikes, that industry in itself.
So you knew what you was talking about.
I did motorcycle wise and power sports wise, but business wise, I had no clue. Thought I did. Right. You know, you always think you kind of know what you're doing, but you really don't.
But you had the passion for it and the hunger.
I did.
And the guy seen it.
He did.
And kind of molded you like the bonsai.
He really did. You know, I'd call him. I was pretty like I take a lot of. I downed myself on a lot of things that I are used to anyway. Like now, I finally see like. I was intelligent on certain things, just not on others. But right. I was intelligent on the stuff that worked, you know. And like, so like when I would hang around with very wealthy people, and I learned early to shut my mouth
and listen.
And listen. And what I would do is, because every time I would speak up, I would make myself look stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So I would keep a notepad, and if these guys would say some kind of word that I had no idea about, dude, there's a dictionary. I still have it called. The Dictionary for Investment and Stock Terms, because these guys were heavy in the investment broker business.
Oh, man. So you're kind of like eavesdropping.
I was.
Soaking up.
And
game.
I would hear it, and I was like, what the hell is this? Like due diligence. Simple word.
Yeah, right.
Simple for, you know, I didn't know what
but back
was.
Then, I mean, you know.
I didn't know what it was. So
what it was,
I go straight home. I'm like, due diligence. flip through that, and I still have that dictionary. I still look at it for humbling reasons.
Yeah.
You know, and then I would slowly but surely start including myself into some of those conversations.
Yeah, start bringing up the words that you learned.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, try to sound a little smarter.
That's a good quote I've always liked is, keep your mouth closed and appear the fool, or open your mouth and remove all doubt.
That's like, great, yeah. Never heard that, but I like that. Yeah, I like that.
Definitely.
But yeah, so I kind of just, you know, we would run business all day long, and I stuck to what I was good at. When we would close, thankfully this guy that saw what he saw in me, I would call him at 6 o'clock every night and be like, hey man, why don't we do this? How come we don't do this? And, you know, if we did this, would this work? You know, hey, I don't understand this. Will you help me on this? And I think he kind of enjoyed that, because I don't think he had ever had anybody other than his own sons that looked to him like that.
Would you consider him a mentor?
He is as far into the top person in my life. I mean, I don't want to say that against my own father and my grandfather. My grandmother just passed away a year ago. I always say to myself that was the only woman that unconditionally ever loved me to the fullest, right. You know, and she's gone now, you know, so, but as far as men in my life and people that I can look up to and call, he's top of the list. Well, we still have, to the day, too.
We have different mentors throughout life. You know, it starts out as our parents, and then maybe a youth league coach or something like that. So, you know, to list him as like a business mentor, you know, from early, you know, that I think that would be acceptable.
You know? Yeah. You know, and like even now in the relationship we all have now with me and his family, you know, his wife, they've got four sons, and even his wife the other day called me, you know, number five.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it means a lot, because I grew up without a lot of family.
What's the only
family
I had. Relationship like with them, son?
Oh, they're like little brothers to me. Yeah. I talk to literally three of them at least once a week.
Yeah. So you actually pull your own weight in that family then?
Yeah, I feel like I do. I mean, they'll call me when they need me for what they need me for, you know, but more or less it's just a camaraderie with the brothers.
But
the
you're
kind of, you know,
like big bro now.
I am. And they were like little bros to me growing up.
So you kind of get to pass down some of
the. I do, and I never had brothers. I got three sisters, so I think that's why it's so heavy on me, is because, you know, they're a void that I never had, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Besides motocross, you play any sports?
I played football in middle school. Was good in it. Was team captain there in Morgantown. I lived in Morgantown for about 3 years of my middle school life. Dad married a lady there, and we moved and built a big farm and all this other stuff there, and that didn't work. So back to Logan County I went for high school. Actually, I went back to Chandler's halfway through my eighth grade, and then I left Logan halfway through my freshman year.
Gotcha. So, you know, we was just talking about how, like, you know, everybody's got their own struggles and, you know, their own shit they deal with in life. And I think a lot of people kind of feel burdened that, you know, hey, he had it good, so that's why he's successful. And, you know, it's simply not the case. I find out more and more that, you know, everybody's got some trauma that they dealt with. So,
absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about the struggles and obstacles you had to overcome.
Yeah, so, you know, you hit it right on the head. I love it when people say, well, it must be nice, or big, you know, I can't stand when somebody calls me big money, or, you know, or man, if you hadn't have met them, this wouldn't have happened,
right.
You know, but what I've learned is those people, and I speak of those people, they're the people that have really come through for me, like, got my back, and has played an intricate role of putting me right where I'm at. Unknowingly, they didn't do it because they had anything in mind. They just wanted to support me. They will never take credit for that. They will slap the person in the face. It's like, oh, if you hadn't met these folks, like, you probably wouldn't be where you were today.
But you put yourself in those places for the opportunity.
I agree.
Alignment is bigger than assignment.
I agree
100% of the time. So.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
But, you know, some of the obstacles I went through was just family life in myself was just really bad. Even, you know, I hate to say that because my grandmother was everything. You know, she really was. I always looked good, smelt good. My hair was always fixed. You'll never see me without my hair like this. And some people's like, you know, they kind of make fun of it a little bit. But I'm like, you know what? This is how I was raised.
It's structure.
It was structure. It was repetitiveness.
That's your structure. That's what works for you.
Absolutely.
You know.
I mean, I don't even want, like, I get out of bed and like throw a little water on my head and my hair's fixed. I mean, and thankfully, God blessed me with a head full of hair and it stays combed.
Yeah, the universe might let you keep it because you take care of it. Right?
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. So when I say that, like, my childhood was bad, I always want to make sure that, like, she's never a part of that. Because they did everything they could. We stayed in church. School was always great. I sang country music as a little kid, and they supported that, like, to the fullest.
Fun fact.
You ever heard of Libby's?
That's my great uncle.
That's his people. That's his people.
Kip?
Yeah.
Was that your...
Libby Knight was...
Yeah, Libby Knight, yeah. Well, his daughter, Kip?
Yeah, I didn't...
Okay.
It wouldn't really...
Rusty Springfield was the...
Tracy and Bodie was the sons.
Okay,
But anyway.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we... Yeah, I sang there when I was 9 years old.
Yeah.
And made it far, made it all the way to... At the time, there was a television show called... Or a television channel called the Tennessee Network, TNN.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
damn, I remember TNN.
Yeah.
That was CMT before TNT.
Yes, that's exactly right. So I sang... On television, on there, because of
Libby's. Remember the guitar logo and everything.
Yes, I do too. It was called the Tennessee Network, or the Nashville Network.
Leanne Rimes got her start out there too, real young.
Garth Brooks.
Well,
anybody came through Libby's in that era of country music.
Yeah.
But I was just speaking of like child, you know, he was talking about his 9 years old. And
but yeah, my grandmother would, you know, we'd go out there Friday nights, we'd audition, and I'd sing on the radio on the Beaver on Saturday night, you know. So, and that's what I always want to emphasize, that like, I am blessed, but I went through some shit, you know. Yeah. My mother was not a good mother. I've not had a relationship with my mother in 8 years at this point, 9 years at this point. My father is a good father now, but he struggled in the years, and you know, it was just a really toxic deal between him and my mother. Very abusive, and you know, hardly any nights as a child I can remember not waking up in the middle of the night of them just beating the crap out of each other.
So whose name do you carry?
I carry my last name is my father's last name, and I'm proud. I mean, my dealership's named after it. It's tatted on my back. Yeah. My kids just, I mean, they love it. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I do care. And that family, my father's side of the family, was phenomenal people. But my dad, I've learned it. You know, people carry it on.
Are they connected with that Stark Trust?
Nope.
Or
it's not down there. I know what you're talking about. Nope. We're not kin at all. Our Stark name come from Robertson County, Tennessee.
Okay.
If you go down into, that's funny you say that. So, that's Adams.
Yeah.
My mother lived on that property, believe it or not.
Right.
Yep, when she was a child. But no affiliation. Cross Plains area.
Yeah, okay. All
right. Yeah. If you go down there, we got a road named after us, and my cousin's the county judge, or the she's some kind of judge down there.
So back to what you were saying.
So you know, we it was just toxic. You know, mom and dad fought a lot. They beat the crap out of each other. You know, and so mom, you know, I lived on Peterson Avenue.
That's where my mom lives.
Okay, so if you pass Hill Road, there's two really junky houses on the right.
Uh-huh.
The second one's our old house.
How'd you deal with that? How old was you, and how'd you deal with it?
7 years old. I remember the day I got off the school bus.
You
and
probably
one of the,
still remember that shit like it was
buddy,
yesterday.
I get Coach Hill's talking about it. I got off the school bus. My bicycle was sitting in the front yard, and a church lady's car was in the driveway full of our stuff, and I knew what was happening.
Yeah.
And I jumped on my bicycle and made it about to the gravel, and they grabbed me and locked me in the car. And I was my grandmother, my whole family lived on Clark Street, which is the little dead-end street behind the elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
That was where my great-grandmother, my aunts, my cousins, and all them lived. And I was going to ride my bicycle over there and just not leave, because I knew my mother was leaving my father. And we moved to Bowling Green that day and lived at the Brass Center here in Bowling Green. And... kind of ran for my father. And of course, you know, she took his kids, so he's level 1,000. And he's in the parking lot, you know, threatening to break into place and take his kids. And I understand.
As a father,
We got an apartment later on in life. I can remember that was probably the best time of my life as a child with my mother.
How'd you deal with that?
It was
internally when you.
You know, you don't know that you're going through it at the time. You know, it didn't seem that horrific at the time because you're just so accustomed
just
to it.
Kind of riding
you're always.
Away.
I'm waking up every night to them beating the crap out of each other. So now I'm sleeping in a foreign place, and I was a really hands-on kid. So like, they didn't have a lot of toys at Brass, so they gave me a VCR to take apart and put back together.
Did you learn anything from that?
I have no idea. I remember I took it apart. I don't know if I put it back together. You know, but I could. But I think as an adult now and going through the things I've gone through now, I think back. Well, I understand why they were doing that and why they were trying to, you know, occupy my time.
Keep busy.
Yeah, but I remember like, you know, first time I'd ever gone to a movie theater was when it was over there off of the bypass. You know.
Yeah.
And my mom had a really nice dress on that night, and she took me and my sister over there, and I just remember my mom being a good mom at that point. I think she was trying to do her best at that moment in her life. And then we got our own apartment. First night we spent the night in that apartment, no electricity. No furniture, nothing. There was nothing in that place. And
she was probably still excited though.
Yeah. We slept my mom.
For her it's an accomplishment cuz she's, you know.
Yeah, she's making
that's
it.
The first step, you know, to.
And I can remember back thinking as an adult now, like that had to be kind of a monumental moment for
right.
my mother. Because my mother had a horrible childhood, too.
Yeah.
I mean, and so I can only imagine that at that point in her life, she felt like she was finally self-sustaining.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And taking care of her family, right? And so, you know, I can remember, because I'm a father now, and if I'm anything in this world, my purpose is to be a father. And I can remember sitting against the wall in the floor, no electricity. The only light we had in the entire apartment was the moon. Swear to God, as weird as that sounds. And me and my sisters laid on both of her legs. We laid our heads on her legs like pillows, and that's where we slept all night. She slept setting up.
Are y'all going to school at this point?
Not yet. We had just gotten enrolled at Cumberland Trace. That's where we lived in Greenwood Villa apartments over off Bryant Way.
Mm-hmm. She's probably thinking, man, if I get these kids in school somehow, get them a meal a day, you know, two meals a
day.
Anything. I mean, all that shit counts, man.
It does.
When you're in survival mode,
yep.
like I'm sure she was.
Yeah.
Man.
You know, Brass played a big part. I remember one of the best Christmases I ever had as a child in that time of my life was during that time. Cause they.
She sounds like a strong woman, though. So where did it go
yep.
wrong?
So, again, at this point in her life, this is probably the most free she's ever been, right?
Yeah.
Childhood was real bad. Met an abusive man in high school. They beat the shit out of each other for years growing through this stage. And now she's all on her own. Well, now she's free. Well, can go either way.
Yep.
And she met a friend, and that friend kept her drinking and partying like a bandicoot, and it all went downhill from there. At that point, I never remember my mother ever doing anything but sleeping on the couch all day long while we were in school. I got my sister up every single day and got her ready for school, made us toast. We had toast, but we had no plates. We had butter, and we put the little squares of butter on the toast and put it in the oven and let it broil. And then we pulled them out. We'd eat soggy buttered toast before school that day. And we would run out to the bus. And when we'd walk back in the door, Mom would still be on the couch, dead asleep.
How much do you feel like this is your drive and inspiration to be a successful business owner and parent?
Yeah. So I don't know that the success part comes from any of that, as bad as that sounds. I think the success part was growing up without things at certain points and like having it in my mind. But like the parent thing is the biggest thing for me. I believe that like, and I struggle, man. I've got four children and my oldest daughter is absolutely going through the hell of her life right now. Like literally today. And I won't speak on that because it's really, really, really bad. But then I have a 7-year-old son that, like, embodies everything I am.
What's the age difference?
So 21,
yeah,
16, 13, and 7.
Oh, good spread there.
Yeah. I'm done at 7, let me just tell you.
It's close to my spread myself,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a struggle. But, you know, what you find out if you have that many kids and they're that spread out is that every child is totally different on their own.
Yeah.
They're nothing at all alike. Even though they may come from the same people, they're not the same people.
Yeah, and how do they end up so different if you kind of try to do the same consistent thing as a parent?
Yeah, hold on.
You're fine.
So we had technical difficulties. I'm not sure where we was at, but we'll jump back to the apartment with your mom. You end up in Potter Homes.
Yep. So we, you know, Mom started partying heavy, sleeping all day, partying all night. Bad boyfriends in and out, like some pretty dramatic stuff. You know, it was one thing to watch your father do some stuff, but when you see a stranger or a new guy do it, it's like it's twice as bad.
Right.
And mom's hanging heavy with this lady that's very wealthy and got multiple DUIs, spent night in jail.
So she doesn't have the same problems not that your mom has. So, yeah, that's a bad mix.
Yep, horrible. And she worked for a law office. I'm not going to say which one, but, you know. So they were able to get mom out of trouble, but she kind of stayed in trouble. It's kind of really a jacked up deal. But they started messing around with some guys that were in like a teenage program, I guess. I don't know, from Potter's. And this guy would be like, hey, you know, you should just take them to Potter's. They, you know, they would do everything. And that's what happened. You know, the saddest, and again, it's one of those things, like, you kind of look for the silver lining in things. You know, Potter's was bad.
So where's your dad at in this time?
Good question.
Yeah.
He's just a block away. He lived in Colony Apartments.
He just washed his hands of it.
He did, but he blamed it on
the
issues, you know, that they were having. My dad loved me, but I do believe that my dad had issues with, you know, having a child by himself without a lady involved, you know what I'm saying? So my dad was going through women too. I mean, it was just one of those things. And, you know, it makes me question, I mean, even as an adult, you know, and I have the best relationship with my father now that I've ever had. But, like, how can your kids go kind of missing for months? You know, because you got to ask yourself that. My kids can't go to the mailbox without me going, where the hell are you going?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, again, as a father, you look at that differently now. Then I just blame my mother on all the crap. But nonetheless, we go to the Potter's. We have, like, a little consultation thing. We meet with the people. They're showing us these pretty pictures of the kids having a blast and all this other stuff. They really sell it to you, you know.
So it's like the Big Mac picture.
Yeah. Yeah. And the saddest thing I can remember, so, you know, we lived there for about a year. The only reason why I know that, because my dad swears it was only a month, because obviously he wants to take the heat off of, you know, why were y'all there in the first place? I didn't leave you there long. You know what I'm saying? Again, I don't blame him like I blame my mother. I do blame her for, like, not calling him and going, hey, I can't handle these kids anymore. I want you to have them.
Yeah.
Instead, they were too busy fighting each other to
right.
do the right thing for us. But the better part of that was is taking us out of her household and the horrible stuff we were seeing and dealing with there and put us in a place that had some structure, had a somewhat of a cleanliness and, you know, healthy mindset around
so
us.
So all that part was good, but how awkward was it knowing that them ain't really your people? You know what I mean?
Horrible. Like, they promised they wouldn't separate me and my sister. We couldn't go to sleep at night because we weren't used to sleeping at night. So we would talk at night, and then they finally snatched her out of the room. I remember the night it happened, and they took her to another room, said that she's just going to sleep in there so y'all can go to sleep, and then the next day she ended up in the girls' dorm. And so now we're separated, which was horrible, because at that point in our life we had
that's
never
had.
Been separate. Yeah, that's it.
All you had.
That's all we had. And, you know, we were the only way we got out. You know, my mother never really come and saw us, maybe once or twice while we were there the whole time. And there's a shocking point to that I'll say at the end of all this, you know, but the Soakie Fair comes back around, and keep those dates in mind. My birthday is August the 14th. Okay. And, the Soakie Fair comes back around. So that's how I know we were there for a year. And we see some friends that lived in Greenwood Villa with us. And my sister, Big Mouth, loved to talk. One of the rules was you're not allowed to tell anybody where you live, even at school. At church, you couldn't tell anybody where you lived. That was one of the rules at the time. It's totally different now. They don't do the same programs like they used to then. We lived in a house with a family. It was a mother, a father, and their children, and then foster kids. And I'll tell you a Logan County story that was kind of wild about that too. But nonetheless, we see these people, and my sister's like, hey, do you know where we're living? She was ready to just tell somebody.
How old was she?
So at that time, I was 9, she was 8. And, you know, if Soakie Fair was back around, I guess I was 10, and so she would have been 9. So she tells them, and a week later, we get a call to the office, and we walk in, and it's my mother and that crappy friend of hers, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, my aunt and my father and his new girlfriend.
Oh, wow. Where have they been, right? I mean, that's, yeah, that's got to be out
here for the rescue, you know. And they sign us out, and we leave. Mm-hmm. Had no idea we were leaving. Had no idea it was our last day. Nothing.
Should have told somebody a long time ago, huh?
Yeah, no shit. And so, but the hardest part for me, like, coming back to all that and knowing, like, the timeline was, and so, again, I have children now, so I look back at it, but, you know, after I had Big Country and was doing really successful then, this is back in 2011, I guess it was, I decided to go over there and pull my records, figure out who my house parents were, timeline, yeah, I was okay there and stuff like that, because I just wanted to piece it all together, because when you're going through trauma like that,
fuck yeah, yeah,
everything's convoluted. Yeah,
you're just riding a wave, man. Yep. You're in survival.
Yeah, no, and you're listening to your dad's like, "Oh, you've only been there for a month," and then you start thinking, "Well, maybe I was only there a month. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, am I wrong in this?" So the lady's like, "No, you got dropped off August the 9th.
Right before your birthday.
Right before my birthday." And I remember this because I told the lady that was kind of selling us the whole deal in the conference room, I said, "Do you guys have anywhere to park a moped?" Of course, I'm a big gearhead. I like dirt bikes and bicycles and, you know, all that stuff. And I remember my mother telling her he wants a moped for his birthday. He wants me to get him one. And I remember thinking, like, I know that, like, 5 days later on my birthday, I was expecting this year, which I didn't. I was expecting a moped, didn't get it. And I think back to, like, I didn't buy this, you know. But it's hard for me to say no.
Well, and there's the thing is, is not getting him a dirt bike going to do better in school and shit and all that? I don't know.
No.
You know?
No.
All he's going to do is feel fucked up because he ain't got a damn dirt bike
at the
end of the day.
I know.
So, I mean.
And I'm all about making them earn their keep and earn what they get. Yeah. I don't want my kids to be spoiled.
You'll get it out of them somehow.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Well, the good thing is when I tell him to go do something, he goes and does it.
Yeah.
You know,
no dirt bike.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I told him today, I was like, hey, you know, if you're going to ride it, you have to maintain it. So when you get home with it, you clean it up, you oil it up, you put it back in its place.
It's a teaching lesson.
He got home from school today. He pulled it right out in the driveway. I'm watching the video. He's out there washing it, WD-40 in it, and everything. I'm like,
there's an investment.
Another lesson. Another lesson.
There's an investment.
I think it was a parenting investment.
Mm-hmm.
I think
it
was.
He's teaching him shit.
Because, again, our kids are so different. You know, where one thing might work for one child, it's not going to work for the other one.
Yeah.
You know, and so...
Well, I think that's for everybody. You know, we're all wired so differently.
So, but, you know, the Logan County story on the Potter's Children Home deal was I had a best friend that lived on Hill Street. And you guys know Auburn.
Oh, yeah.
So, Hill Street, there's a certain person that lives there, and that's it. You know what I'm saying? And I grew up and hung out with all of them. You know what I'm saying? I don't even know if I should say that. You know, all the black people in Auburn lived on Hill Street.
Right.
And so my best friend there was a guy named Andre.
Yeah.
I do not know his last name. I have been told lately by some people that grew up down there, some older people, that his last name was Tisdale. Andre Tisdale. But I have looked him up religiously.
He's
can't
from
find
Auburn,
him.
There's a good chance.
So found out he is from Auburn, or he is a Tisdale. His name is Andre Tisdale. He practically lived at my house because his house was kind of toxic. But while we're at Potter's, his sister is one of our housemates.
Oh, wow.
So listen, we're all the way from Auburn. Now, yeah, at the time, it felt like we were moons away.
Yeah.
Bowling Green was like the big city, you know. Yeah, I remember coming to Bowling Green seeing a bubble Caprice cop car, and I was like, holy shit, it's a RoboCop car.
If you didn't get your shopping done in Rivergate or Clarksville, you was doing it in Bowling Green.
Yeah.
If you lived in Auburn, you was in Bowling Green.
Yeah. Well, we did most of our, like, Russellville was the everyday for us.
Yeah.
That was big to me.
Yeah.
You know, the downtown area with a square, you're like, this place is big.
Right.
Oh, Russellville was popping back in
the day. Yeah, the Sonic and then the square.
The bowling
and, like,
alley.
Cruising around and stuff.
Yeah,
the bowling alley. Yep, yeah, and Hardee's.
People would actually, I would tell people all the time, man, Russellville, you used to go up there on the weekends and there would be fights.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, there would be cars from Sonic to...
And that's when Sonic was on 4th Street.
To Bowling Alley, and they would just ride.
Yeah, the old Sonic. Yeah. That's the one I'm talking about. Yeah.
And you would either figure out where the party was at, and you'd go out there, or, you know,
if there was
no party going on, there'd usually be a fight or something right there in town.
I bought my first car here in Bowling Green, and the first night I had my car, I drove to Russellville.
Russellville. It's a must.
Yeah, it was. I was, because as a child growing up, my grandmother's very conservative. She's Southern Baptist, you know. She didn't believe in a lot of stuff, like you know, partying and all that mess. So, you know, so we'd be in the Sonic little bay waiting for our food, and these, I remember there was always this red Ford Escort hatch on wire wheels that would cruise through, and I was like, I just want to sit here one more time, Granny. Just sit here, just let him drive through, you know. And he'd drive through, and then he'd cruise back through the square and stuff like that, you know. But she would let me do that, so that immediately when I got my license, that's all I could think about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I went and picked up my buddies, and I went straight to the square. Or straight to the, like, Hardee's and all that
oh,
stuff.
Oh, boy,
like that.
You catching on, like, a Logan County Russellville football game tonight?
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Yeah. Good old days. Yeah. So, let's get, I guess, we're going to jump into some modern day, some now stuff. Man, I always ask a couple questions. One is, do you have like a morning routine that you stick to?
You know, I do now, but you know, again, I'm about as active as a father can be. Uh-huh. You know, I get up at 5:30, wake the big kids up. Mm-hmm. They got to be on the bus by 6:40, so I get both of them up, make sure they're all up and going. My youngest one, I get him up, get him ready, take the dogs out, all that stuff. But lately, in the last month, I've been getting up, going to the gym. When I get the big kids up, I go straight to the gym, work out there for about an hour and a half with one of my good buddies, and then come back to the house, get the little one up, and get him going.
Well, that brings me to a question I want to ask, because, man, when like I first connected with you, I had been hearing about this program, and I seen that you did it, and it kind of inspired me.
75-hour?
Yeah, so yeah. You completed 75 hard.
I did not complete 75 hard. I won't take the rain for that. I wished I could have.
Yeah.
Commitment has always been a tough part for on a personal side.
Right.
I'll commit to cleaning the house every day, or you know, taking the trash out, or selling a car. You know, I'll commit to what other people need done. But it's hard for me to like really just wholeheartedly dive in on something that just.
How far did you make it?
I think the furthest I made it was day 36.
36.
That's ooh, pretty damn far.
Damn, yeah, that's pretty far.
Yeah, I did, and I'd lost a lot of weight and got in really good shape. And
damn, you're halfway there.
It hurts.
Yeah, that's when it gets hard, though, really.
It does, it does. They say day 60 is like you just want to give it all away, you know, but,
yeah.
You know, because you get on to a little bit of a good pace there, and then you get closer.
What was the hardest part, man? What was?
Just, you know, well, you can bullshit the program.
Right. Discipline, you know.
Bro, a lot of people, like, strategize the program to fit their needs, and that ain't that works. I'm a huge follower of Andy Frisella.
Yeah.
Andy
Frisella. He's probably watching right now.
I wish he was, you know, because I would love to, you know, when we go to St. Louis next.
Is that how y'all know each other? Through the Apex thing? Or?
Oh, was you on Apex?
I'm in Apex.
So I know, what's his name? Lord have mercy.
There's like one other dude in Bowling Green. I can't even think of his name.
No, I'm talking about the main guy, Ryan.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, look. Oh, hold on. That's the last one. Oh, no, that's the last one. Hold on. This one guy. Oh, there it is.
Oh, yeah.
And at one point, I was talking to him, like, religiously. Hold on.
Right.
Somewhere in there. Blake from the Apex.
Yeah,
okay. So... but no, I was part of it.
And it may have been in one of them, you know, Polaris or something.
It might have been, yeah, because I was heavy into it, man. We were number 1 in the state of Kentucky. We had a race team, and we were big time back then. And then, like, from 2014, I went through a divorce, sold the business, and got into the car business. And so that was probably one of the hardest, you know, at that point in life, 2012 was the biggest year of my life as far as income and success and just obtaining a new house and bought my dream car and you know, all that stuff. And then 15 was probably the hardest year of my life. And it sucks to say that because that was the year I got married to my new wife. That was the year I had my last son. You know.
What was hard about it?
Financially, I was struggling harder than I've ever struggled in my entire life. And,
you know, had you already been successful and you had already got this foundation laid and then you kind of... You're trying to,
Bro, straight to the bottom.
Yeah.
Straight to the bottom and I'd hate to say homeless, but we didn't have a home. We were staying at my mother's apartment, 2-bedroom apartment with 4 children and my 2 sisters.
How long did it take you to rebound?
One month, I lived with my mother, and that was the day after Christmas was the last time I spoke to her in 2016.
Yeah.
And
Is that something that you think you need to reconcile?
I have
to kind of complete the.
That's a good question. I battle, you know, one of the hardest things of my life is the fact that I don't have a relationship with my mother. But my mother also made me feel like a mule. Every woman that I've ever had any kind of relationship with.
I'm not trying to pry or nothing.
No.
Does she have
that's what we're here
anything
for.
To do with your kids? I mean, what's that nope. like? What's the relationship? So when it's
she
all.
When she shut me off, she shut my children off too. But I stopped paying her bills. I stopped helping her.
As a parent, you're probably looking at that like, man, you know, fuck you for that too.
100%.
Right? I can forgive you for fucking me over.
Bro.
Right?
Like, I mean, there's things about my childhood that I would never want to like say out loud. Unfortunately, I just got to live with it. I mean, I've told my therapist, like we talked about, but she's done some really horrible stuff. The worst stuff you could ever do to a child, more or less your child.
Yeah.
I mean, not to say that you doing it to any child is, but like, the mindset you got to have to do it to your own kid is just really, really messed up. And so, I'm willing to forgive you for that. And you can't let one night of rage go.
Sometimes, man, it's just best to get the toxicity out. You know.
I mean, you know, here's what I know is that her life has been at standstill since that day.
Because there's a thing, and I know it's your mom and everything, but you really don't owe her nothing.
I don't,
you know, like,
I don't believe we owe our parents anything. I believe our parents owe us.
Yeah.
To the extent of, like, doing right.
If she had did right by you, I'd be saying something different.
If she had done right by me, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's the thing. My dad wasn't that much better. You're right. You know what I'm saying? As a parent, early on, it's not like he was that much better, right? But look, the relationship he has with me now and my children, I would discount all the stuff that ever happened to me as a child to know that both my parents were good to my kids.
Taking that into consideration and being a parent now, what advice would you give to someone that's a brand new parent?
You brought them here. Well, I guess it depends on what they're recovering from. Because like we talked about, like I believe that everybody's kind of gone through some stuff.
So maybe deal with your own demons before.
I do. You know, but, you know, at this rate, you know, people have kids that aren't planning on having children. And I'm one of those.
Right.
I had my child when I was 20 years old. You
me
know,
too.
I wasn't ready.
Right.
Wasn't ready at all. Damn sure shouldn't have had it then or with the person or any of that stuff. But at the end of the day, I had her and I told myself, like, if nothing changes, and I tell people this all the time, if you're not going to change or do better for your kids, nothing will ever make it happen. I can promise you that.
I feel that.
Yeah. Because my oldest daughter, the one that's absolutely going through it right now, saved my life. I was going down roads of, you know, doing illegal activity and riding motorcycles like a bandit. I mean, you know, I just wasn't living a life that was going to last very long. Whether I died from riding motorcycles the way I was riding them or went to jail for the rest of my life for doing the stuff I was doing. So, and I realized there was a turning point in my child's life that the two collided.
Mm-hmm.
The lifestyle, not the motorcycle, but the other stuff, collided in one evening. And I looked at myself and I thought, this was not what I had this child for. I have to make a change. And I did. That night I cold turkey. I'm really big about that. Like, if I set my mind to something, I'm really good about just saying, done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just walk away. And
sometimes you got to, but being able to do that, you know,
it's tough.
Yeah. So props to you for being able to do that.
Yeah. But as far as advice to a parent, you know, I just believe like if you're going to bring something else into this world, like a human being, you owe it to that person to give them everything and to protect them from the things that no one protected you from.
And on the same side of that, what advice would you give a kid out there that might be in the same position you was in, like, to get them to the next level?
6 months of a total transformation can change your entire life. I believe just 6 months of a different habit, taking the wrong things out of your life and separating yourself from the bad people. And it's really hard to see the bad people because some of the worst people in some people's lives are the closest.
Maybe like all they have.
Yeah. And it's so hard
to
see
somebody, find somebody.
Yeah. Find somebody. Yeah.
Right.
Or just somebody that sees it differently because, you know, I'm thankful for the family that I was telling you about that kind of took me in. I was criticized by my entire family, like, "Oh, all you want to do is hang out with them. You think you're better than us now?" You know,
hands in a bucket.
Oh man, yeah. I remember I showed up to a cookout with my very best friends, like best friends growing up, like in high school, and they were still best friends to the day. It was just a hard time for us, but like, I was kind of dressed like this. I pulled up in a little BMW, you know, and had my pants pulled up, my belt on, and shit like that, and they were like. It really made fun of me, you know. And I remember then I was like, you know what? I was broke then. I'm not broke now. So, like, yeah. You make fun of me, but I feel like what I'm doing is.
But do they not want better for you?
Well, I think that they. But it made them uncomfortable.
Here's the thing. I got to say this at this point, though. When someone sees someone in their surroundings step out and do better, they want to hate on that because that means they could have did the same thing.
They could have.
They didn't do the hard work that it took to get there.
Well, and like my best friend since second grade, we grew up in Greenwood Villa together. And like we, of the group, we're the two that are doing the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of that old school clique of ours, like we're the two that's like really doing the best. And it's just like crazy to think like, though the other guys were doing good then, but it's just because their priorities were in the place that they, like we wished we had the cars and the wheels and the clothes and the guns and all that stuff, because that stuff was cool then.
Mm-hmm.
But now they've never grown out of it.
Right.
And but here we are. We got all kinds of cool stuff now. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But like, and they're struggling. And it's just like, you know, it's like it's kind of it's, you just. I think it's about idolizing the wrong stuff in the wrong time periods of life. You know, but. I'd rather done that stuff then than to do it now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, it's a whole different. It's different now, man. The era is different.
It most certainly is. You know what
I'm saying? It's like comparing the music from that time to now. I mean, it's just you can't.
No.
Or the athletes or
yeah,
right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's done and gone. Like
it
you know,
is.
It's time for something new. So man, you know, we was talking about how do you feel like the internet has changed your business?
You know, business is totally different. You know, I was lucky enough to get into business in 07, right when Facebook was getting started. I was early on to that, too. I tried to really dive into that stuff. Hell, I remember when email campaigns were, like, something new, and, like, you really had to be strategic on how you built those things. And YouTube, you know, we'd had videos on YouTube long before anybody had videos on YouTube, you know, and now I feel like if you're not in it, you're not going to succeed. Like you might have a little small niche of an area, but it's going to be very hard to expand from that. You know, I think that it you can do it without it, but you're not going to go that far.
Gotcha.
And that's okay. Some people are perfectly fine with a little area of business.
Can't scale it.
Yeah. No, you can't scale it.
No.
I agree.
So in the car business, man, in used car sales, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is like a common misconception?
You know, that business in itself has changed so much in the last 10 years to where I believe now that a lot of people, and there's still a couple of guys out there that are really pushing for sales techniques and sales word tracking and you know, all these different tactics to get the customer to buy now kind of thing. I don't and never have sold off that style. I believe I want to sell off knowledge and customer service. Those are the two things that I want to sell off of. I want to give the customer enough knowledge for them to make an educated decision.
It takes some heat off you too, though.
It does.
They know what the hell they want and what they're talking about.
That's right.
Then shit, it makes your job a little more easier.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, there's no pressure.
Right.
You know, if something happens later on down the road, I don't think I've ever had a customer that's been able to come in and be like, man, you sold me this car and I wished you wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Because they can't. Because I never was like, oh, you got to buy today. You got to buy right now. I got another customer. Look at it. I just don't believe in that crap. Because here's the reason why. You as a consumer can know just as much about my inventory as I do before you ever walk in the door of my dealership.
Damn right, yeah.
And so there's the game is gone.
Mm-hmm.
The hiding the number and playing the profit, no, that's all gone. So I believe customer service is everything. I believe that you give a person, one of the biggest things that I kind of pride myself in doing, and I hate to give this away because I feel like other people will do it, but if a customer comes on my car lot and I don't have a car they want, or I don't have one in their budget, or I don't have the financing they need, or something like that, one, I will tell them where to go that might have it. That's one. And then two, I will tell them, hey, if you find a car you're interested in and you don't know anything about it, send me the VIN number. I'll pull the background on it. I'll pull the numbers on it. I'll tell you where you should buy that vehicle.
What's your add value for them?
Well, 90% of the time, those people will leave, go look at some cars. They're never going to get the service that they got from me.
Nah.
I promise you that.
Yeah.
And then they will come back and be like, hey, man, look, we're going to bump our budget a little bit, but we would rather buy a car from you.
Well, I do the same thing, like, with internet sales. You know, I get calls all the time where we don't have anything available.
Yeah,
you know, I tell them, you know, hey, this is going to be your best option in that.
Sure.
So, you know, people remember shit like that too. Yeah,
they do.
3 years down the road, if the car they buy across town don't work out,
that's right.
They're probably going to remember.
Yeah, I wish we would have bought that one from you, but we're here now. So, and it happens. I mean, it does happen. When we were again, I'm blessed to be trained in this business by who I was trained by. You know, our motto at our dealership was service is not a department; it's an attitude.
Ooh.
That was the number one thing because we had a...
That's good.
Yeah.
Some nuggets right there.
Yeah. So, I mean, but we had a dealership that was on the same service road as us that hated to talk to customers. Don't know why, but they just refused to talk to customers. So, we had a...
Well, dealing with the public can be...
Oh, they're tough.
It can be tough sometimes.
Buyers are tough, man. They're not... But
especially if they come in on the defensive.
Like that's what I was going to say. Most of them do. They dealt with somebody along.
He's going to try to get over on me. Yeah. You know.
Well, you always get that guy that walks in like, listen, man, I'm not playing no games. I know what I want. But, you know, but what we would do was, and I loved it, and I trained all my sales staff to say it. When they would be standing in the showroom, the customer would be like, listen, we're not going to buy right now. We're going to go down and talk to your competitors. You better get your pencil sharp. Our sales guys would tell them, well, hey, we'll have a cup of coffee waiting for you when you get back. Because we knew they were going to go down the street and not get spoken. They would walk through the front door and somebody would say, can we help you? Can we help you? Can we help you? You having a nice day? And they would get back to the back and they'd be mad as hell. Like, oh, I don't need no help. I just want to look.
Your competition was helping y'all sell cars. And they didn't even know it.
100%, man. And so they would, by the time they got to my office, if they made it all the way back to my office, I would step out of the office and walk out there and say, hey, man, Aaron Stark, how are you? They'd be like, oh, man, everybody keeps asking me if I need any help, man. I don't need anything. I'm just looking. Yeah. Like, hey, man, the worst thing we would want to happen is for you to walk in here and not get spoke to.
Yeah.
We're going to leave you alone. If you have any questions, let us know. They would leave, go down the street, not get a single hello. Good morning.
That's
how's
not
your
what
day?
They wanted, really.
Right. And then they would see the difference. Mm-hmm. They'd get in their car and they'd come back. Well, we went down there. They wouldn't even speak to us.
Mm.
Yeah, we get that a lot. And we'd move on to business. You know, so we learned a lot in that business. I mean, and I cut my teeth off that business. But I think I was green enough and dumb enough to be receptive enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'd been like I am now, I couldn't have gone in that business and do as well. I would think I'd walk in and know more than I do.
Yeah.
So I think that was the biggest advantage I had.
Well, you know, you got to have the giver's game mindset. You know, and help enough people get what they want, you'll eventually get what you want.
So. I agree.
Which brings me to another question we always ask. This is the Wise Words podcast, so we always ask, man, do you have like a favorite quote?
I do and I don't. I mean, I try not to. Here's what I say. So it is what it is like one of my number one. Like I say it a lot.
Yeah.
Probably more than I should. But I say that with so much intent to the fact that, like, I believe that we are given a certain amount of energy per day, and I think an ability, a positive ability that a person can have is to really intentionally put that energy to the right places. And I don't believe anybody in this world, I don't think that they should get more energy than the people I love, so I try to give as much of that energy to them as I can, my kids and my wife. Outside of that, I try not to involve myself in any negativity.
Mm-hmm.
If people, because what I've found out is that if I mean, I've got a message in my phone last night of somebody that come in to a message on my Facebook to tell me about someone else that they knew that I knew. And I just didn't even respond.
Yeah.
I'm like, I just don't, you know, nothing you're saying is going to help my day get any better? And if I involve myself in that drama, then I'm no different, you know? And so that's why I'm like, it just is what it is. You know, I thought about that because I heard that in one of your other ones, and I really should have come up with a better one. But
no, I like how you gave it and you defined it and what it meant to you. So.
Because I think to be intentional on everything you do is really the most important. Because I try to be very careful on what I say to people, how I say it, and what I mean behind it. Because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to mislead people. I don't like miscommunication, and I damn sure don't want to hurt people's feelings to the point where, like, I intentionally said something to that person to hurt them. Because I get a lot of people that come in and you know, one thing that I do at the car lot, I don't rush people when they come on the lot. I don't run out with my business cards like, what can I sell you? You know, I just don't do that. But sometimes I get people that come in and I'm like, y'all working? Y'all here to talk to anybody? Y'all want to sell something? and immediately, and I have it in me. God knows I do. I'm a very stubborn person, but immediately I want to say, well, you know, and be defensive about it. But what I've learned is I give myself 2 or 3 seconds to really, like, control that emotion.
Oh, yeah, listen, say that again.
Yeah, I try to give myself a few seconds to really control the reaction emotion that I give to people. And I've learned that through therapy. You know, the smallest part of our brain is the fear part of our brain. Well, the fear part usually responds to the pissed off stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, anger is a secondary emotion as well.
It is.
So if you're pissed off, about something. Something happened, whether you got embarrassed, whether you feel betrayed, like, anger is secondary.
Exactly. Right? No, I agree 100%. That's right. And so I try to really think that through. Not to the point where I'm like, well, I don't want to say anything stupid. I just want to give you the best reaction that you deserve. And now, don't get me wrong, some people are going to test that, and you're going to not be able to control it as well as you should. And I'm guilty of that. But I believe, especially in business, I believe that's one of the biggest things, is that I've been able to take people that do not like me when they meet me, and toward the end of the deal, they're an advocate for me.
That's always fun, though.
They're a raving fan. It is a blast.
That's the funnest.
It most certainly is. You ever read Raving Fans?
No, I have not.
You should. You would love it. It's a very small paperback.
Well, that goes there. That answers the next question, then.
You got a favorite book that you recommend?
Well, last year I took on memoirs.
Okay.
I thought that was... I did Rick Ross. Mm.
What about The 48 Laws? You ever read that?
48 Laws?
Of Power. 48 Laws of Power.
I have not. I've read...
Yeah,
I've read the 7... Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
Yeah, yeah.
The Raving Fans book is a fun read. It's not a an informational, but it's very informational. It's got a cool storyline. It's corny, but it's short read too. It's not that big of a book. But every employee I've ever had that's worked underneath me, and I've had probably, good Lord, 300 and something at this point, I've given that book to just about every one of them, and especially ones that I saw, you know, hope in. Because it embodies customer service, the experience of the customer.
What about the memoirs?
Man, so I kind of got fun with that. I read Shoe Dog, Phil Knight's story, the Nike CEO.
Before the movie. You read it before
Yes,
the movie?
I did read it before the movie, which, you know, the movie didn't push as much on Nike as they did on Jordan. Jordan's the big deal, but, you know, but the Shoe Dog itself, the story's great. I mean, you talk about a company that really went through some stuff. And it's hard. I mean, I've got all Under Armour on right now, so it's kind of sad to talk about how. But yeah, I mean, they've taken some weird turns. But Nike's story is very inspirational, because they've endured a lot of really bad stuff. I read Matthew McConaughey's Green Light.
That's a really good read.
That's a really good one. Yeah. Actually, I didn't read that book. I listened to
Audible. Did you? No, I did not.
Oh,
I had
he's the read. Yeah, he's the one that does the
narration. I figure that's only right.
You yes.
Know, AIDS or whatever.
Oh yeah, the Texas Buyer, Dallas Buyers Club.
Yes.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. So bad. He did that and Wolves of Wall Street at the same time.
Wow.
That's why in Wolves of Wall Street he looks as skinny as he does. Yeah. He looks sick. Yeah, because he was in that role. I'm trying to think of what else I read, but I read a few last year.
So you read a lot?
I haven't this year. I've been really on a grind this year, but.
Grind season, huh?
Yeah, it really has been for me. It's either shit or get off the pot, you know?
I feel that.
Yeah, so I was going to make a change this year, and this, you know, I did, obviously.
Well, congratulations. You just got the business,
a month and a half ago.
Yeah, I've seen that, so.
Yeah, it's big. You know, I have the credit repair business as well. and it can be as big as I want it to be, and I just haven't really put on
the market. What business is that?
More or less disputing discrepancies on people's credit bureaus, but yeah. It's a very...
What's it called? We're going to throw some links on
Yeah, Spartan for. Credit Solutions is the name of that
Spartan
company.
Spartan Credit Solutions.
Yep, I did that in 2020. I was to the point in life, credit-wise, that I needed to file bankruptcy. But I have a banker that would go to war for me, and they were going to require me to file on him, and I just couldn't. I couldn't do it. My loyalty to him was, it was a Logan County Bank's First Southern National. And
First Southern?
Mm-hmm.
And my mom worked there for like 40-something years.
At this one or
the one in Logan? Logan? The one in Russellville.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know many people down there, but I started with this branch.
First Southern's a good bank, man.
That's the only bank. You know, my business, both my businesses.
The way they do their loans is a little different. It is. You know, like they're a little more, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Small town.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I like that.
Shout out First right. Southern.
Yeah. 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 But yeah, I couldn't file on him, so I wouldn't. He did me a solid right outside of my divorce. Let me go unsecured on a very large loan so that I could sell my house to get away from the baggage of my divorce.
And that's another thing. First Southern, man, they do a lot for the community and shit too, man.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you go to them for any kind of sponsorship, if they're down with it, they'll help you out.
Yep.
So,
yeah. So yeah. That's why I started the credit repair deal, because, you know, I just didn't want to do it. So I looked into it. I kind of self-taught myself and bought some programs that kind of administrate it, and I got my credit back up.
Right.
You know? And I said, well, hell, if I can do it for myself, I can do it for a bunch of other people, you know? And I charge half of what a divorce. A lot of half of what a bankruptcy would cost. I mean,
they might be coming, you're in the same, you know, they might come see you and then go to the divorce.
Yeah, I got one for that too if they need it. But yeah, so I mean, I did that, and you know, I really am looking for somebody to kind of just split that with, like, hey, here's the business. I just want you to run with it,
yeah,
and give me half, and you can keep the other half, you know. And so, but it's hard, man. It's very hard to.
It sounds like it ain't something that somebody could just.
Man, my first goal was $1,000 in a night. When I opened the company, I said I just want to make $1,000 a night. If I could do that, I'm happy. And I made $6,000 in a matter of like 2 hours.
In a night.
In a night, sitting in my recliner, sending text messages. And I thought,
it's really easier than most people think it is.
It really is. And that's why another book, Power Broke, Damon John's book. It's a pretty good book.
What's it called?
I'm getting
some good Power of Broke. That's, you know, and I try to hold myself big on that, because in my mind as a salesman, because I feel like that's where I'll always be, I'm a high school dropout. I don't have a GED. I don't have any formal education at all. I believe that you could take it all from me today, and my kids are still going to eat tomorrow. Like, you can literally drain my bank account and take everything I've got away from me, and I promise you, my wife and kids are going to be okay tomorrow, because I'm going to figure something out. I'm going to put it together some way, somehow.
Do you think that that's a learned behavior, or do you think that that's
I think it was a an adapted kind of behavior. I had to. You know, and you're so indoctrinated to, you know, you need to go to college. You need to save money. You need to invest money in a 401k. You need to have insurance. You need all these things that everybody tries to, you know, push you to have and to be. It's just not as relevant these days.
Well, I haven't read the book, but you know, there is a power of being, you know, your back against the wall. You know, because once you get, you know, you get some money or whatever, you get complacent, comfortable.
Yep.
And before you know it, you know, you're in over your head.
Absolutely.
So The Power of Broke by Daniel Pastner.
No, Damon Johns.
Damon Johns.
Okay.
This is called The Power of Broke, How to Empty Pockets a Tight.
Let me see the cover. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Go ahead and get your Amazon on.
Yeah, that's, I mean.
You know, that guy's an inspirational story, you know? He started FUBU, and
it struck core in me because, like, I had a conversation with somebody the other day, like, what does broke mean to you? Like,
right.
Broke can mean different things.
A lot of people's definition of that is different. Absolutely.
All right, so, I mean, we always do this little rapid fire thing. It's kind of the end of the show.
Yeah.
So we appreciate you coming through, man.
Absolutely.
It's been a real good conversation.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it.
I think a lot of good gold nuggets have came from it for everyone to pick from.
Yeah.
But anyway, rapid fire, man. We're going to ask you some questions. This first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
Are you a early bird or a night owl?
I'm an early bird.
Yamaha, Kawasaki, or Honda?
Yamaha.
Favorite sport?
Supercross.
That was an easy one.
No balls.
How do you eat your steak?
Medium well.
Medium.
All right. Wings or drums?
Drums.
American made or foreign?
Ooh. Can I say both? I love them all, but nah, I guess I gotta stick to American made.
Ranch or blue cheese?
Oh, ranch.
What's the fastest you've ever clocked in a car?
160.
On a bike?
Oh, I don't know, but it's probably over that. I've taken a Busa as fast as I could get it.
Where at?
Parkway.
Dark or clear?
Oh, dark. Yeah, clear don't work with me.
Alright, that's it, man. Yeah, I appreciate the comments.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. Really.
Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Definitely got to know you, man.
Yeah.
And I feel like we should tell you our story.
Tell it. I don't care shit.